Emotions have run high throughout the trial of Derek Chauvin, marches and protests and riots erupting worldwide in support of George Floyd. But today, you could have heard a pin drop in the courtroom as the one man who holds all the cards told Derek Chauvin what his punishment would be. But not before we heard from the most important people affected by the crime, Floyd's family and Chauvin's family, too. Judge Peter Cahill handed down his sentence without any drama, saying that it was not the place for being profound or clever. He was instead rather matter of fact.
A sentence for count one. The court commits you to the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections for a period of 270 months. That's 270. That is a 10-year addition to the presumptive sentence of 150 months. This is based on your abuse of a position of trust and authority, and also the particular cruelty shown to George Floyd. You are granted credit for 199 days already served. Pay the mandatory surcharge of $78 to be paid from prison wages. You're prohibited from possessing firearms, ammunition, or explosives for the remainder of your life. Provide a DNA sample as required by law. Register as a predatory offender as required by law. And then you will receive a copy of the order and also the attached memorandum explaining the court's analysis.
270 months, also known as 22 and a half years. Too little? Too much? I'm joined by Court TV anchor and former prosecutor Julie Grant and renowned trial attorney and co-host of Beyond a Reasonable Doubt podcast, Mark Garagos. Julie, let me begin with you in the straight reporting of this. Were you surprised at 22 and a half years?
Ashley, good evening. Thank you for having me tonight. I was a little surprised. I was thinking that the court would fall more in line with what the state was asking for. They were asking for 30, and they really justified it well in the memorandum of law they wrote in support of the sentencing they were hoping to have today. And they were looking at that top number of the sentencing range, that number 15. 10 is at the bottom, 15 at the top, and 12 and a half in the middle. And they were wanting to double that number because of those four aggravators. And today it was surprising to me that His Honor only found that two of the aggravating factors, the particular cruelty in the way the crime was carried out and the abuse of Derek Chauvin's position of authority, existed in order to support the departure upwardly from those guidelines. So, yes, a little surprised that it wasn't a little heavier.
I was surprised until I read the memorandum, the 22 pages, and then I started to understand why. Let me put those four aggravating factors up, because this will make sense to people who maybe are trying to figure out how the judge got there, why the judge didn't go lower, why the judge didn't go higher. The four that, you know, the prosecutors had asked for an upward departure were based on this. Defendant abused his position of authority. The victim was treated with particular cruelty. The defendant committed a crime as a part of a group, and the crime was committed in front of multiple children. And don't take that graphic down, because I want to address those. In the memorandum, the judge said those top two, the defendant abused the authority and it was particularly cruel. The judge agreed with that. But those bottom two, that this wasn't part of a crime as a group and it wasn't committed in front of multiple children, that's not necessarily what he didn't agree with. What he actually wrote in his memorandum was that the children, he didn't feel were as traumatized, or that the trial proved that these children were traumatized. He actually said the evidence showed the kids were laughing and smiling, so that maybe that factor shouldn't be part of this. And then that group aspect, the judge actually wrote in the memorandum that those other officers didn't know they were part of a crime, so that the group fell away. There was also a fifth one that the judge noted, the particularly vulnerable George Floyd. It's not on there, but the judge dismissed it anyway. So, Mark Garagos, going to that, does that help to really explain that the judge just did this with dispassionate jurisprudence and said, this is the math? And he looked at other cases. They're in here. The other cases that were the same, the plus 10 kind of made sense on, you know, the presumptive range. Did it make sense to you?
Yes, but not as not from the legal standpoint that you just read it. I mean, the I always thought, because of Officer Noor, who was the officer who had the one shot that killed tragically a woman and was convicted of third degree murder and a manslaughter, he received 12 and a half years, I believe. And you'll remember his is the case that went up to the Minnesota appellate courts and then caused the murder of the second degree to be reinstated here through a series of things. I have thought if you had asked me, and I don't want to be flip about it, but that judge, this judge, based on the trial, when you took a look at what, the way he made decisions, he tried to always come down the middle. And here he kind of did. The prosecutors were asking for 30. The defense obviously was asking for probation, but the presumptive was 12 and a half to 15. If you take the 30 and the 15, you get 45, you divide it by two, you're at 22 and a half. I always think, I know that when you look at it and he's got the memorandum, that you think he's actually doing this kind of geometric calculation. I always, call me a cynic. I think it's reverse engineering. I think he knew he was not going to go to 30 years. I think 22 and a half is exactly, if you would ask me to bet. Yeah.
Tell you what, Julie, I want you to jump in because as a professor and also someone who just lives literally in a courtroom for court TV, the memorandum, he mentioned it. The judge said, "If I'm not going to go on and on in my statement in court, you can go ahead and read the 22 pages if you want," which made me think, but wait a minute, you've got the memorandum ready. Everything's ready to go before you've heard from these people, the victim's impact and the mother of Derek Chauvin. Let me just play two things so that our audience knows what the judge saw, even though the memorandum was written. First, I want to show you one of the victim's impact statements. It was the daughter of George Floyd, Gianna Floyd, who came in via cell phone. Take a look at this.
"And when you see your daddy again one day, what do you want to do when you see him?"
"I want to play with him."
"If you could say anything to your daddy right now, what would it be?"
"It would be, I miss you and I love you."
That is very powerful to see that in a courtroom. I should mention George Floyd's brother and nephew also gave powerful impact statements. And then George Floyd's mother, or rather, Derek Chauvin's mother. I was sort of so shocked to see her for the first time speak. And look, there's a victim too, right? She's someone's mom and she's losing her son too. So I want to play what she had to say. Take a look.
"My happiest moment is when I gave birth to you. And my second is when I was honored to pin your police badge on you. I remember you whispering to me, 'Don't stick me with it.' Derek, I want you to know I have always believed in your innocence, and I will never waver from that."
She went on to say that she was so upset about how he's been depicted in the media and by the prosecutors and by the public, and said that that's not the man that we know. So, Julie, I always thought, maybe I'm Pollyanna, that judges take into account those passionate pleas in the courtroom, that even if it's just a little bit, it might make a difference in the sentencing. But this was already written. It was all set to go. So I guess I'm wrong.
Ashley, you are so smart. You're always on the ball. Yes, you're so smart to pick up on that this judge, an excellent judge, very thoughtful, as Mark pointed out earlier, very fair, very down the middle in his rulings. I think he had been thinking about what he was going to do today, probably right when that verdict came in back in April. So certainly a very thoughtful decision, and we would hate to think that it doesn't matter. I certainly don't want anyone at home to think that anything that any of those individuals we heard from today fell on deaf ears. It didn't. I'm sure his honor took into account how they would feel in those respective positions on both sides of this case, Derek Chauvin's mother and, of course, the Floyd family, who is heartbroken and devastated about this. And I'm so glad you played that clip of little Gianna, because you're right, Ashley. I mean, she just really stole the hearts of the world today, as she did after her dad was killed. And she's going to go on to do big things. And I'm sure the judge was mindful of George Floyd's family when he was authoring this memorandum. But, of course, he has to apply the law to the facts, and very carefully so. So as you pointed out, obviously you read that very carefully. You caught what was even in the footnotes, Ashley. Of course you would, because of how careful you are with your legal journalism. And yes, in those footnotes, he was saying he just did not believe that those young bystanders who were minors really were traumatized by the incident, one of those reasons. And then, of course, that fourth aggravator with the other participants. That was always a little bit troubling to me, because there haven't been criminal convictions convictions for those three individuals. Their cases, as you know, Ashley, are still hanging in the balance, set to go March 8th
which, by the way, is interesting on tactically. First of all, remember, Eric Nelson waived jury on the aggravating factors. You were entitled to a jury determination on that. He did not want them to make that determination. Turned out that that was a smart move. Number two, some of the language that you talked about, Ashley, it's not a collateral estoppel, but it certainly gives you a window into what the judge is thinking in terms of the last three that still have not been tried and now probably won't be tried in his courtroom first, will probably lateral over to the federal court.
Right. Well, I'm glad you said that, because when we come back after the break, I want to talk about the federal cases, because 22.5 years, we're only at the beginning. There are at least another two cases potentially coming to Derek Chauvin's future. And then there are the other officers as well. We're going to talk all about that and just how long he will actually spend behind bars next.
Thank you, Your Honor. At this time, due to some additional legal matters at hand, I'm not able to give a full formal statement at this time. Very briefly, though, I do want to give my condolences to the Floyd family. There's going to be some other information in the future that would be of interest, and I hope things will give you some peace of mind. Thank you.
Derek Chauvin, the only thing we've heard from him effectively, other than I won't testify, in that courtroom in Minnesota, right after the sentencing. I mean, there you have it. That's what you're hearing. Julie Grant and Mark Garagos are still with me. And Julie, the notion that he got a 22.5-year sentence, in the state system, you don't serve your whole sentence. And most court watchers are saying he might serve about 15 of that. But this will not be the end of how much time he'll spend behind bars. And that's because of another case involving a 14-year-old boy and, of course, the federal civil rights case. So can you do some mix and mash math on those?
Exactly, Ashley. Yes, this is just the tip of the iceberg for him, really, because that big federal case, it's still looming over his head. And when he said that very strange thing in court that you played a moment ago, what popped into my head, I thought, oh my gosh, is he going to be pleading? Perhaps he's going to be pleading to the federal charges that are looming, because he has all these other outstanding legal issues. And we've discussed the possibility of appeal a lot. And I do think there are some very viable issues he has for appeal. The biggest one being that the judge, Judge Peter Cahill, did not sequester that jury. I think that's going to be the most viable issue Derek Chauvin may have. And so, yes, so we could look at a number of things. We could look at it at trials for these other cases. We could look at a potential plea agreement. And then, of course, the question pops up, would he have a sentence that runs concurrently at the same time or consecutively after this 22-and-a-half-year sentence, depending on whether or not he is convicted or accepts responsibility for the allegations and enters that plea of guilty. So we shall see. But that strange message really stood out to me. Is I wonder if that's an indicator when he said peace of mind. That's what I kept thinking to myself. Perhaps he didn't want to put the family through this again. But who knows? I could be wrong. Just a guess, Ash.
Well, a plea could also get him something lower in the federal court, and if it's served, you know, concurrently, that could make a difference. Julie Grant and Mark Garagos, thank you very much for your wisdom and your insight tonight. So appreciate it.
Thank you.
And then just to our viewers, I just want to leave you with the pictures in Miami at Surfside, where the condominium emergency continues tonight. The live pictures showing us that is still the circumstance for 159 people unaccounted for. Thank God 120 have been located, but 159 people, folks, we're still looking for them. And God willing, when you wake up tomorrow, there'll be some better news. We'll see you again on Monday.